called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. It'll be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me?
Huh?
You really do?
Huh?
Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the taxi. Nah, I was legends. Rest in peace, Pop's a legend. Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, night coast and blew up. Who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like this. Never make me think wrong. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog. And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me.
Now, I like this. I gotta admit. I like this. This is me coming at y'all for the second day in a row, and I'm kind of digging it. I'm kind of digging, like, on the daily tip, just coming through and speaking to the people, speaking to the masses, speaking to my people. This is the preseason podcast of the year. Coming back once again, Jay Hicks with the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, part two of our two-part giant podcast that we did in collaboration with the Rundown South. My man CL Palmer holding down the Rundown again. You can find them on Twitter at The Rundown South. That's D-A Rundown South, all one word. And we did a joint podcast, as we talked about yesterday, with myself and Anthony Houston, who can be also found on Twitter at A.K. Houston, H-U-E-S-T-O-N, A.K. Houston. Shout out to my man Anthony, who just had a birthday yesterday. So happy belated birthday, Anthony. And again, CL is going to be putting this. CL and I and Anthony kind of got together and collaborated on this podcast, y'all. So I hope you guys enjoyed part one yesterday. And you know, we went heavy on the hip hop side with part one. This time around, we kind of dove into some more basketball related stuff. We talked about free agency, and we talked about some free agency of years past. So your boy has to apologize because I might have gotten a little carried away. I don't know. I'll let you guys judge for yourselves. And if I was tripping, just let me know. Holla at us on the website, hiphopsportsupport.com. Just go ahead and write what you thought of the podcast on the page. You can actually comment on hiphopsportsupport.com through your Facebook account. I don't know if I ever mentioned that on the podcast before, so we do have that capability. So if you're logging into Facebook and you see an article from Hip Hop Sports Support and you want to comment, go ahead and comment on the article on the Hip Hop Sports Report website through your Facebook login so we can see who you are and we can shout you out and let you know that we appreciate your feedback, even if it's negative. I get a lot of negative feedback on Twitter. And you guys know who you are. Maybe you know who you are. Maybe you're listening. Maybe you're not. But in the event that you are, you guys know that, you know, you've had some negative things to say about me or my opinions or whatever. And, you know, I take it all in stride. I usually do. I can't think of too many instances where I let you jokers get under my skin, you know. But be that as it may, please go ahead and comment on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio and let us know what you think of the podcast, because that's where we can be found for sure. Again, the Twitter handle is twitter.com/HHS Report, and facebook.com/HHS Report is where we can be found on Facebook. Remember when it was called The Facebook? It was like a million years ago. Anyway, so part two of the podcast with CL Palmer and the Rundown South and Anthony Houston and myself. And again, we start off talking about the Golden State Warriors this time around, whether or not we expect them to be a juggernaut, just rolling through like the juggernaut on X-Men. I'm the juggernaut, bitch! Remember that? I'll break you in half. Y'all can YouTube that. But yeah, are they a juggernaut? Is a little bit too much being made of this Warriors team right now? I think it might be, and I kind of explain why. And we have an article out on the website as well talking about, you know, Kevin Durant's legacy and how he kind of spit in the face of what we think of legacy right now and the hierarchy of players in league history. He kind of, you know, kind of pissed on that a little bit. I mean, what do you want me to say? I mean, he kind of took it a different route because he had a shot at getting at reaching the highest of levels of where we view individual players in basketball lore, and he decided to not go that route. So you can read about that. You can read about whether or not you were wrong about the Golden State Warriors the last couple of years. I have a piece out on that. There's also a piece out again on Durant. And LeBron, there's our piece on LeBron James and what he did that Kobe and Jordan never did. All that's out there on Hip Hop Sports Report. So please check that stuff out and share it with your friends and colleagues and anybody that you know that you think is interested in basketball, your dog, your grandma, I don't care. As long as they're clicking and reading, I appreciate it. And so go ahead and check that out. And then from there, we actually talk about Durant, whether or not he was justified in making his move and whether or not his decision was a good one, and whether or not it was just a millennial thing. We kind of get into that discussion a little bit. And then we kind of jump in the time machine and flash back to 2010 and talk about whether or not LeBron was justified in his move and whether or not the Cavaliers organization, did all they could do to put a winner around LeBron James between 2005 and 2010. So all of that's on the part two of this podcast. Again, we appreciate CL for making that happen for us. The video version, I'm working on that, y'all. So you guys can see this podcast on YouTube. If you haven't heard it yet, you'll be able to see it there. And I also want to take a quick moment to acknowledge Tim Duncan. I did it briefly yesterday. I'll give you my quick spiel on Tim Duncan. I know I had some people ask me about it on Twitter. What do you make of Duncan all time? So I always view players, there's two ways to judge them. There's their resume, and then there's the eyeball test, right? And so obviously both the resume and the eyeball test were both exceptional for Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan is one of the greatest players we've ever seen. I think everybody would agree with that. When it comes to separating him from the other great players of all time, I am not the biggest Tim Duncan fan in the world. I respect the hell out of him because of everything that he's accomplished. And I think he's garnered more accolades and has a more decorated career than almost anybody in league history, including the greatest of the great players. I mean, five titles. I think he had three finals MVPs, two regular season MVPs, 15 All-Star games, a bunch of All-NBA teams, and a bunch of All-NBA defensive teams, even though a few of those he didn't deserve because he was past his prime and people don't know how to vote on All-Defense properly. They typically just go off reputation. But be that as it may, Tim Duncan is a phenomenal player in league history. I think that things kind of fell perfectly into place for him based on where he landed, or where and when he landed, I should say. He went to San Antonio because David Robinson got hurt the year before. That was a playoff team. That was like a middle of the road Western Conference playoff team that he joined. And that's why it was 2 years later they were winning a championship, because they were already a contender in the West when he arrived. Robinson got hurt. The Spurs ended up tanking that year. They get the number one pick. They luck out and literally hit the lottery. I think Tim Duncan's nickname should be the Big Lottery, and maybe instead of the Big Fundamental, because San Antonio hit the lottery and they hit the jackpot with this guy coming to their franchise. And he was ready to win right away. He was a four-year player in college, and everything just perfectly fell into place for them for now and the next, you know, 19 seasons. And he turned out to be the consummate teammate and professional. Things that I give him great credit for, as opposed to Kobe Bryant, who I have trashed on many occasions for being a selfish player and a selfish teammate, and I believe that that's what he was, albeit he was a great player. And when it comes to talking about Tim Duncan, all you're going to hear about when it comes to Duncan tributes, everybody's just going to toss out that he's the greatest power forward of all time. They're gonna casually just toss that line out there like they're just throwing a napkin away. You know what I'm saying? Like they just balled up a Kleenex, just blew their nose, and just are casually throwing it in the waste paper basket. You know what I mean? Like, no, I don't think it's that simple, that cut and dry, to call him the greatest power forward of all time. Mainly because I don't believe he was a power forward. I think he was a center masquerading as a power forward. Because again, he came to the Spurs and David Robinson was already there. And David Robinson was the center of the San Antonio Spurs. That's who David Robinson was. They weren't going to bring in Tim Duncan and then call David Robinson the power forward. They had to call one guy the power forward, so they made it Tim Duncan the power forward. Tim Duncan, 7 feet tall. He guarded centers his whole career. He does pretty much everything the center did, and he had a little bit of a jump shot, but so did Patrick Ewing. Nobody ever called Patrick Ewing a power forward, you know, but they called Duncan a power forward because he came into the team with Robinson on it. And pretty much for at least half of his career, they paired him with other players that were smaller than him on the front line, guys like Kirk Thomas, Boris Diaw, Matt Bonner. These guys were all Malik Rose. These guys were like 6'8", 6'9", 6'10 guys that they paired next to the 7-footer, and they called those guys the center, and they called Tim Duncan the power forward. That doesn't make any sense, right? So that's how you end up with everybody in basketball considering Tim Duncan to be a power forward, you know? And plus, it's a lot easier to get Tim Duncan in the All-Star games when he doesn't have to compete with Shaq for votes for the All-Star game. He doesn't have to compete with Yao Ming for votes in the Western Conference All-Star. It's a lot easier to get him voted in over Dirk Nowitzki or whoever, or Kevin Garnett even, than it is Shaq and Yao Ming. So that was another reason that they made him, or even David Robinson for that matter, that's another reason why they made Tim Duncan the quote-unquote power forward. And you saw the same thing with all NBA selections. It was easier to plug him in at the power forward slot back when they did it that way, that they had the five positions. Much easier to put him in there and let Shaq be the center than trying to debate between which one of those guys deserved to be on the first team, because they both deserved it. You know what I mean? So all those reasons explain why Tim Duncan is considered a power forward, when in actuality, I really don't think he was. He was really a center, but it's a lot easier to call him the greatest power forward of all time and not think about it than it is to say, well, he's one of the best centers, but maybe he's not better than Akeem. Maybe he's not better than Russell. Maybe he's not better than Kareem, right? So And again, considering how everything just worked out where he landed, I don't know. Is he better than Kevin Garnett? Like, I don't know that he's better than Kevin Garnett. If Kevin Garnett wound up in San Antonio and Tim Duncan was in Minnesota, I don't know that we would be talking about Tim Duncan the same way. So, again, much respect to Tim Duncan. I love him as a professional, and I respect him, and I think he was a phenomenal player. And just go back, I go back to Game 6 against the Heat in 2013, the way he turned back the clock on Miami, and he was just dominant from the word go in that game. But the Spurs came up a little bit short that year, but he got his redemption the following year and got that fifth ring. So Tim Duncan, one of the greatest we've ever seen play. I don't know if he's in the top 10, in my top 10 ever. He might be outside of my top 10 of all time, even though his accolades would suggest that he deserves to be in the top 10. So that's the difference. My quick spiel on Duncan there. Salute to him. I bumped my gums enough. Let's get into the podcast. So part two of the podcast with CL Palmer and Anthony Houston. Let me know what y'all think.
Are we gonna get into this free agency talk while we on the Warriors?
I'm about to say, if we got time, we can finally get to it, since we did kind of just bump into some sports right there. Now, because I was gonna begin by going with Kevin Durant going to the Warriors that everybody has been talking about, because I'm still like, how is anybody gonna win? I don't understand. Like, how they not gonna go 82-0?
I can tell you right now. I can tell you.
I know what you're going to say, Justin.
Yeah.
They've got to play the New York Knicks twice this year. That's what you was going to say. I got you right there, dog. Don't even worry about
80
it.
80-2. This is the D-Rose Porzingis era. You know about it, right?
The Latavian gangbanger, right.
The zinger.
Hey, bro, that picture with him with them cornrows just told me everything I needed to know about Kristaps Porzingis.
He's real
world star.
He's real deal Holyfield, man. Right. He's real deal. I rock with Porzingis, man. I don't know about the rest of the Knicks roster, but I rock with Porzingis. There's not a lot to dislike about him right now, aside from the fact that he works for James Dolan.
Yeah. You can't pick your bosses.
No, that's true.
Yes, you can, but
just pray for him.
Right, that's all we can do. But I mean, so here's my take on the Warriors. And again, you know, it's all on the website if y'all want to check it out, hiphopsportsreport.com.
You be on it. I gotta get like you, man.
Hey, you know, I did a little radio back in the day, so you know, you get used to plugging stuff certain times. You know what I'm saying? You got to plug. You know, when you hit the top of the hour, you got to plug the station. When if you have a radio guest on, you got to keep reminding the people who come in and out who the guest is. I got a little bit of experience with that stuff. So, you know, it's all on the website. You know what I'm saying? But we've talked about it before. But I'm going to say it again. The Warriors are not a lock to win the NBA championship next year. And to take it a step further, if you ask me right now to bet the Warriors or the field, I'm taking the field, because history has shown us that these super teams that come together usually don't win it all in the first year. If you want to call the Cavs a super team with Love and Kyrie and LeBron, they didn't win it in the first year. If you wanted to call it you sure? They just won the NBA championship this year.
They won a championship. That wasn't a super team. Kevin Love ain't a super.
Nice. Kevin Love averaged 26-12 before he got to Cleveland, though.
Yeah, that's before he got to Cleveland, but then he got to Cleveland, and now he just looked like a dude.
That's his job. He's supposed to do that. That's the same thing Bosch did. They called Miami a super team in 2011 when Bosch came down from Toronto, and Kevin Love put up better numbers in Minnesota than Bosch did in Toronto. So some people looked at, I mean, you know, that's semantics. Some people
debate that a little bit later.
Yeah, I'm saying, but my point is that they didn't win in the first year. Some people, you know, you could even look at the Spurs and say they was a super team when they got LaMarcus Aldridge. Well, they didn't win it all in the first year. You know what I'm saying? But if you want to look at more hardcore examples, you can look at the 2011 Miami Heat. You can look at the 2004 Lakers. None of those teams won it in the first year. There's chemistry issues, man. Like, it takes time for those pieces to gel. And when you put a super team together, it's usually at the expense of the rest of the roster. So what happens is even in a year when the cap went up to astronomical proportions like it did this year, you still have the Golden State Warriors having to jettison the back half of their roster to make room for Kevin Durant. And that was the whole Warriors battle cry was strength in numbers, right? Strength in numbers. What do we hear after the first two games of the series, the finals? It was all about the Warriors bench. The Cavs ain't got nothing for the Warriors bench. That's all we heard last year in the finals because the Cavs had two guys injured and then we had nothing left on the bench. And then it's all about, oh, well, the Warriors bench is just superior and they got a deeper team and depth and all that stuff. Well, they've already gotten rid of in fairness to Golden State, they've managed to keep Iguodala and they have Livingston right now. But they've lost Andrew Bogut, they lost Harrison Barnes, they lost Maurice Spates, they lost Barbosa, they lost McAdoo and Ian Clark, they lost Brandon Rush. They basically lost everybody on the bench aside from Iguodala and Livingston. So when you consider that and the fact that – and they lost two starters and the fact that they were already a great jump shooting kind of a soft team, right? They were pretty soft, right, except for Draymond. That's and Bogut, but Bogut's gone. So Draymond's the only guy with any dog in him really on the entire roster. They brought in a 7-foot shooting guard to go with these other shooters that they already had. So they were already the best shooting team of all time. Now they're going to be even a better shooting team. But they didn't improve on the weaknesses that they had. You know what I mean? So, yeah, they're going to be, hellacious to deal with on the perimeter. But if the jump shots aren't falling, what do you have? It's the same kind of thing. And they're even softer in the middle now than they were before. So, yeah, I definitely don't think that Golden State is a lock to win it all. I don't have a problem with them being the favorite going into the season. Like, if Vegas makes them the favorite, I'm not going to argue that. But the idea that they're just going to roll through everybody and win 5 championships in a row, absolutely not. They might not even be able to keep this team together after next year because news had just come out this past week that the salary cap for 2017-18 is going to be lower than what was initially expected, and it's going to make it harder for them to keep all those guys together, especially considering that Curry's contract is up next summer and Durant may have his contract up next summer if he doesn't exercise that player option. So I don't think that they're a lock by any means to win it all. Tell me why I'm wrong. I'm just saying.
I don't know. You got something you want to say, Andy? Because I got a couple of things I know I want to say.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say that they're not – saying that they aren't a lock to win it is a – I mean, it's just a fundamentally true statement. Anything can happen. They have a lot of changes, especially on that back end. It's not as simple as adding one Kevin Durant to the entire mix and then adding Kevin Durant worth of wins. These are people. This is the moving parts and all this kind of stuff. So it's complicated. If they can figure out a way to make it work, which they're a very well-oiled machine, and Kevin Durant, one of his big knocks is that he doesn't take over like people expect him to, or he kind of defers too much. Maybe that is the perfect kind of superstar, elite athlete, elite basketball player to put into a team like the Warriors, but it doesn't solve their issues that they can have with a team that can beat them. But the only team out of the East that can beat them is the Cavs, and all the other teams in the West are also going through certain levels of transition So to say that they may not win a championship is accurate, but I fully expect them to at least reach that Western Conference Finals round with the talent they have.
I look at what the Warriors are doing as kind of like what we talked about with Jay-Z and Diddy, is reinvention. Basically, the small ball thing took its course. Now, this is not a complete change, though. Like I said, it's just a reinvention. And because of their strength in numbers, they had a lot of, like, good, mid-high level players on their bench, which allowed them to be deep and play all these different lineups and, keep people off balance. The thing that they found out in the finals is their offensive system works. They just need more talent in their best five.
And if you took I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. I mean, only because – go ahead.
Check this out. Look at it like this. If you look at the finals, who was open more than
– Harrison Barnes.
Harrison Barnes. That's Kevin Durant now. You can't leave that dude. Matter of fact, if you ask me, Kevin Durant's going to be the number one option on offense. And if you decide to double-team, which way you going to go? You going to Clay? You going to go Steph? I don't know which way to go. You stuck. And the way they move the ball, it's going to cause mass confusion. And they're just basically going to say, look, you might be able to do some things on offense. You might be able to get a rebound here or there. But you better make every single shot. Because if you let us get right, we're going to run off with it just like we did last year. Except this time, we're really going to bring it to. I said they're going to average like 115 a game.
Didn't they average 115 a game this year?
Yeah, but I want to go more toward like 125, but I got to see it in motion before I can say it. But I think they're going to be like the highest scoring team in NBA history.
They were one of the highest scoring teams we've ever seen this year. They hit more threes than any team we've ever seen in the history of the league. Steph Curry hit 400 threes. He broke his own record by over 100 threes for threes in a season. Klay Thompson this year, I think, hit the third most threes in a season ever in the history of the NBA. Their offense was unlike anything we've seen before. They were like the 07 Patriots or the 98 Minnesota Vikings, you know what I'm saying, for basketball. But the last 5 minutes of the finals, they didn't score. You know what I'm saying? Like, but the Cavs got stops. It's still about defense when it comes down to the come down at the end of the day. They didn't get better defensively. Now, I'll say that the David West and Zaza Pachulia pickups were decent, but they didn't get better on the defensive end of the floor. And we saw what kind of a liability Stephen Curry is on the defensive end. He's a major liability. And for all the people that think that Russell Westbrook was problematic for Kevin Durant's game, like, oh, Westbrook, you know, he takes too many shots and he doesn't facilitate enough. And now they think that he's going to play with Stephen Curry, that things are just going to magically just work out for Durant. Y'all understand that Stephen Curry takes 20-something shots a game, too. He averaged 30 in the game last year, Stephen Curry did. He led the league in scoring. So now you're adding Durant in with Curry. There's going to be some friction there in terms of who shoots the ball when. Does this guy have enough shots? I don't think Curry is going to just automatically transform into a pass-first point guard. He's not going to be Rondo out there. He's going to be looking for his shots still. And Clay's still going to want his shots, and Draymond's still going to want his shots. So it's going to be a minute for them to work all those kinks out. Now, again, I agree that they'll be one of the last four teams more than likely in the league. Like, they'll make the NBA's Final Four more than likely. But I just don't think that it's a foregone conclusion that they're just going to just roll through everybody, because they already had a 73-win team. They were already 5 minutes away from winning back-to-back titles. They did not need this drastic of a shakeup. And they're adding in one of the 25 to 30 greatest players of all time onto their team. That's a big shakeup. That's I mean, we can't underestimate the chemistry piece of that, the ego piece of that. There's a lot of factors at play. And we don't even know how Durant is going to respond to that pressure, because he had quite a few garbage games in the playoffs this year. And he was garbage in game six against the Warriors, where Klay Thompson went off. Had Durant come to play in game six, Oklahoma City's in the finals. And if Oklahoma City's in the finals, win or lose, I'd be surprised if Durant still went to Golden State. So, I mean, like, I just don't see it as an open and shut deal that they're just going to run a roughshod over the NBA. Now, I mean, they'll be there, you know what I'm saying? But I just don't think they're going to just destroy everybody. And I'd be surprised if they won the NBA championship next year.
You'd be surprised?
A little bit, yep.
I would not be surprised at all. Now, this might just be me speaking from, like, the way I like watching basketball. But the way I see it, if you look at the way Golden State goes about moving the ball, I don't think it's going to be an issue about shots. Because if Kevin Durant is initiating the offense, then, I mean, Steph Curry doesn't need the ball in his hands. He just got to get open for threes. Klay Thompson just got to get open.
But what happens when they get open and they don't get the ball?
Well, why wouldn't they get
because Durant wants to shoot 25 times a game.
Well, you can let Durant shoot 25 times a game and still get the ball passed out to whoever it needs to get to. I mean, if you think about it, all this is going to do is just make it more efficient. Somebody's going to get a lot of open shots. And if somebody's getting open shots, more than likely they're going to make more of those shots. So when it took Steph Curry maybe 20 shots, it might only take him 15 now because he's going to be open all the time because you're rolling pick and roll defense over to Kevin Durant. You're looking at Draymond initiating the offense pick and roll with Durant. And it's like there's so much confusion that could be going on a given play with those I'd say at least those four, Kevin Durant, Draymond, Steph, and Klay. With those four right there, there's like a limited amount of plays that you can run and pick and roll, double picks, you know, hot train, whatever you want to do. There's so many different ways they can thrash people. So, yeah, it's going to be tough for everybody out there.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask y'all this. I'm going to Anthony to chime in on this. Why do we always underrate chemistry in sports? How many instances do we have to see where chemistry really does matter? You know what I mean? And we see teams that we didn't think was going to get there, but they had a better team chemistry or they were a little bit more mature of a team. Because I don't think Golden State's the most mature team in the world. I think they showed that in the finals. Why do we tend to underrate those intangible things that really matter in sports, man? Because chemistry is a big deal. And that was part of what made the Warriors special. And I can't say that they destroyed it because we'll have to see how it plays out, but they definitely tampered with it a lot. You know what I mean? What is the deal with that? Like, why can't we just understand that the 04 Pistons were not the most talented team in the world, but they went to two straight finals because they had the perfect chemistry?
Real quick. I'm sorry, man, but let me put it back because you said chemistry, but look at who was at the meeting. They're there the whole team. So everybody's having this move. Like, if you look, Klay don't even have a problem being a number two. So he's thinking, we got Kevin Durant, I'm going to get even more open shots. They're all in on it. So I'm not worried about the chemistry because if you look, it was already on the Olympic team, just like the big three in Miami. And they talk about it all the time. So I think it's already chemistry. Yeah. Go ahead.
The thing about the chemistry is that's always an issue. But at least for me, the way I look at stuff, chemistry is one of those things that you can't know it. It's there until you see it, and then you really know it when you don't see it. But for the Warriors, it's a thing where, you know, like CL was saying, they have been recruiting this guy all season. They maintained recruiting him probably up until they knew they were going to play them in the playoffs. And then picked it right back up, probably right after they were done beating them. And you have to imagine they've considered how that would work the whole time. And you know, Justin, you've talked about the level of hubris they've kind of had forever. I mean, the idea that, you know, you are trying to win a title, but also, as they probably see it, guarantee what they would hope would be their third title by adding Durant in there. I mean, I would hope that they've considered what that would look like, you know, logistically. So, but again, it comes back to chemistry. You know, Harrison Barnes played a good role for them, but at least on paper, he's the weak link. And you add Durant in there, who can at least do most of the things that Harrison Barnes does and go from there. So I don't really know how we can determine their chemistry issues until we see them. And I think that's how you always kind of underestimate chemistry problems, because you can't know it until it's like the saying about porn. You don't know it until you see it. And that's what chemistry is. That's how it's just a hard thing to nail down until it's all out the window.
I mean, it's true what y'all saying, because there is a question of how will it all fit? How will everybody make concessions? But I'm 27, so I guess I'm more entrenched in millennial culture than, you know, a lot of people my age. But so I guess even older than me. But what it is I've seen is just like Kevin Durant looked at when he was at was like Microsoft, and the Warriors was Apple. Apple was getting up with Kevin Durant and saying, I said, I'm doing good over there, but you see what we got going on here. You know, you see, we cooking up all the top flight stuff over here. We got it. So all you got to do is come add what you bring to the table, and we really going to take off. And I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. Not to get off into the, like, is he wrong for doing what he did, or is he taking the easy route? But
he is, which he is. He kind of is. He's kind of trying to. He's trying to.
But I don't think so, because it's because of the coach he came up in. Because, you know, me and Kevin Durant are the same age. And I totally get why he went over there. Because when you sitting on the sideline, or when you in the game, and, you know, you was up like 15 going in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden they come back and now they won by 10. Like, damn, that shit was like fun over there. Like, I think I might want to, like, try some of that. And, I mean, they made the pitch. And I really think it's going to be chemistry by the time they get out the game in training camp, because I know how Steve Kerr is and I know what he likes to do, you know, based on what I see him doing in Phoenix. And I'm waiting to see. I'm really anxious to see what that offense looks like.
I think Kevin Durant absolutely is trying to take the easy way out. And, you know, okay, so once again, it's already written.
I mean, I'm always for taking the easiest way out. He's still got to work through the championship. I mean, they're not gift wrapping it to him.
That's why I say he's trying to take the easy way out. I'm not even saying it's going to be easy, because, like I said, I don't think that they're going to win the title next year. But as it stands today, I think he's attempting to take the easy way out. But as I wrote about on the site, man, Hip Hop Sports Report, Durant is a part of the hierarchy of basketball. And that's a very exclusive club that only the greats of the great players each generation get introduced into. And so when you're of that hierarchy, even though it's hypocritical at times, there's an expectation that you are, as the best player, it's your responsibility to try to elevate your team to a title while you're in your prime. That is your job, you know? And Durant is still in his prime, even though he's been with the organization for 9 years. That's a long time. But he's still in his prime. And the team was still on the brink of getting back to their second finals this year, and maybe would have gotten there had Durant played a little bit better. Fair? And so now the thing is that, like, you know, LeBron and I are the same age. But I didn't agree with when LeBron went to Miami, I didn't agree with that either. And then now there's a lot of other, you know, details to that, because I'm a Cleveland native, and so there's a lot of other details that go into that.
Because if you look at the job he had before, he was like, I'm not working here anymore. I don't see nothing wrong with your job.
See, but okay, and that's exactly what, not to keep saying this, man, beating the dead horse, but that's exactly what I wrote about, was that people keep looking at it and saying, he's just changing jobs just like any of us would change jobs. But it's not the same thing, because no matter what you do for a living, you could be a carpenter, you could be a farmer, you could be you could work at, you know, Burger King. Like, nobody is checking for the number one burger flipper in the country. Like, nobody knows who the number one marketing exec is in the country. Nobody knows who the number one farmer is of all time, and nobody cares. But people care about basketball. It's different. People spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to watch these guys play every day. people go, you know, like look at the TV rights that have come down with the NBA. Look at the ratings. Look at the merchandising. Everything about the NBA is different. Like, you can't compare Kevin Durant's job to your job or my job because nobody cares about my job. Like, I do my job when I come home, but there's not 20,000 people cheering me on when I drive into the office every day. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not what happens. Like, it's just different. And so because we have fans of basketball, people who aren't fans of Burger King, people who aren't fans of, you know, even like Microsoft, like you said, like people aren't really fans of Microsoft. Nobody is paying $100 to watch Microsoft put computer programs together. Like, it's different. You know what I'm saying? And because people enjoy basketball as a sport, you therefore have these debates that grow out of that. You know what I mean? Like, people go to the barbershop or they get on Blab like we're doing right now and have these discussions about it because we care. You know what I mean? And it's just not the same as what everybody else's 9-to-5 is. So you can't compare it to that. So when Durant spits in the face of what we deem as the hierarchy of basketball and say, wait a minute, you're too good of a player to want to go join up with that team, it carries some weight. So if he wins 2 or 3 titles, you know what I mean? We're never going to put Kevin Durant quite on that level. That's why Kobe Bryant drove Shaq out of town, because Kobe knew that in order to get to the level that he wanted to get to, he had to win rings with Shaq off the roster, because nobody would take him seriously in the pantheon of great players if he only had rings with Shaq.
See, all right. You hit on a couple things.
I tend to do that. I don't know. Sorry.
Like, Kobe thing, I said that's more because he didn't like the fact that Shaq wasn't all basketball. He didn't live, breathe, and eat.
I think that's true also. Yeah, I would agree with that as well.
And I could see the way that Kobe is built, because I'm kind of built like Kobe too. If you're not all about it, it's like, I can't stand being around you. I can't work with you. Like, if I had to come to work and see you, I just put my head down like this again. And you know, you just got to go about your day. Now, you are kind of correct when you say it's not like everybody's 9-to-5. But I will say, once you get to a certain point in your career, you will be recruited the way LeBron was. If you really are one of the best at your job, it might not be the best burger flipper, but if you're a top-flight chef, then of course you're going to have all type of restaurants trying to recruit you to get you to come to be the head chef in Miami.
I can't. But here's what I say in response to that. So the chef analogy, I see what you're saying, except for the fact that Durant was the head chef at that restaurant, right? He was the number one guy. So if the reviews aren't hitting like they should be, he's probably the number one person you want to look at and say, well, maybe we got to change up something, or maybe we need a better lead chef, or that lead chef needs to improve, because he was the man there. It's not like he was the number two or number three guy in Oklahoma City. He was always viewed by most people as the guy there. So if they're not winning championships and he's the guy, then he has to shoulder the majority of the burden of that blame. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's like, you know, he can leave and go join up with another crew if he wants to. But I don't know that it's fair to say that the rest of the crew around him was bringing him down. He's supposed to be elevating them up if he's that good. So that's one thing. And as far as LeBron is concerned, excuse me, as it relates to LeBron, man, listen, the thing that people don't understand about why LeBron left Cleveland the first time, and I've said this 1,000 times, and I'll say it briefly here, but LeBron put the Cavs on a clock. You know what I'm saying? So LeBron said, hey, when he signed his extension in 06, he said, I'm signing a 3-year extension and I'll have an option to do what I want to do. I'm not signing a 5-year extension. That put the whole world on notice that the Cavs basically had that last year of his current deal plus the 3-year extension to win a title. And he put everybody on a clock. And when he put everybody on a clock, he forced the organization to function as though there's a ticking time bomb waiting to go off behind them. And it forced his teammates to play with that pressure under them as well, knowing that there's a ticking time bomb ready to go off.
But see, the thing about that is like, that doesn't mean go get Antoine James.
Like, everybody thought Antoine Jameson was the right move at the time, and I don't think they made any moves without LeBron co-signing them. Isn't that fair to say?
They never have. They never have.
They never made any move without LeBron co-signing it. So
LeBron would know what type of move he needs to co-sign. He didn't really learn that until he got to Miami.
Right. Isn't that convenient? So when LeBron gets to Miami, he's waiting at the airport trying to recruit free agents to come down. He didn't do that when he was in Cleveland. It's not the Cavs' fault. The Cavs did everything that they could do. They created cap space in 2005. In 2005, they went after Michael Redd was the first option. Michael Redd turned him down. Ray Allen was the second option. Ray Allen turned him down. Joe Johnson was the third option. Joe Johnson turned him down. And they had to settle for Larry Hughes, and they still got to the finals. It wasn't – maybe had LeBron done a better job recruiting – maybe they would have had somebody to come play with him in Cleveland rather than like when he goes down to Miami and he's waving dudes in at the airport, holding up the sign with their name on it. You know what I'm saying? Talking about Ray Allen, Shane Battier, come play with me. He didn't do that in Cleveland. He was focused on his free agency. That's why he never quieted the speculation about it until halfway through the 2010 season. He finally said, I'm not talking about free agency until the summer anymore. But he kept egging that entire process on from the beginning. He knew exactly what he was doing the whole time because I thought that he was planning his exit for quite a while, you know what I'm saying? And now it's his prerogative to leave if he wants to leave, but it wasn't the organization's fault that they couldn't get the talent that he wanted around him. He was to blame for that. Even when in 2009 they had cap space to go out and get Trevor Ariza, Ariza called LeBron and said, I'm going to sign with y'all, but I need to know, are you sticking around? Because I don't want to sign there long term and then you bounce and then I'm just there on this team. And LeBron was non-committal. And supposedly the same thing happened with Ron Artest. The Cavs was close to getting Ron Artest, and the same thing happened. So by him being non-committal, it made other free agents non-committal. So all of the moves that the organization made, some of them were hasty moves, but they were done because LeBron put them in that position that they had no choice. They had to make those moves. They had to improve the roster. That's why they made the big deadline deal in 08, and they got Ben Wallace and Delonte and Wally Szczerbiak and them and Joe Smith. They had to make that move because they knew if they didn't do something, LeBron's going to leave, right? So they had to do what they had to do. But the players knew in the back of their mind that, hey, man, if we screw up, LeBron's going to bounce. Mo Williams even said that on the Believe Land special. So to me, LeBron was as responsible as anybody else for the Cavs' failures as far as not getting to more championships during his first tenure with the team. And ultimately, his reason for leaving was that the team didn't have enough success. But he was the main reason that they couldn't do that. He hamstrung the franchise. They couldn't operate freely knowing that LeBron was going to leave and that sword was hanging over them the whole time. You see what I'm saying? I'm done ranting. I'm done. I know. I said a lot. But I'm just saying, like, I get annoyed when people don't know that part of the story, or they choose to ignore it because they want to trash the Cleveland franchise. And it's like, the Cavs were in a tough spot. Like, what did you want them to do? Like, they tried to sign better players. The players turned them down. Like, that's all they can do. They made the cap space. They turned them down, but what you want them to do?
Do you agree with what some of the stuff he's saying? Or a lot of it?
I mean, it comes down to players want to make money and win basketball games. And right now, like I was saying it on the last Orange and Blueprint podcast, this is basically and this is pre-Kevin Durant switching teams. I was like, this is a Warriors, Cavaliers world we live in. Those are like, at that time, those two appeared to be the best teams. I blindly, I would pick them to match up in the finals again next year. Okay. And if that's something that is at least a logical kind of step, and you're Kevin Durant, and you want to be a rich basketball player who is in the title hunt every year, the best way to achieve both of those goals is to take your talents to Oakland or to Cleveland. And he chose Oakland. I don't blame him. It just kind of, you know, those are the two things that they want to do as professional basketball players with this competitive spirit, blah, 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 blah. You know, I think LeBron did the same thing. LeBron wants to make all the money and win all the rings. To do that the first time, it meant leaving Cleveland. It meant, like Justin said, putting Cleveland on the clock, trying to force them to do all these miraculous things that they weren't going to be able to do without him agreeing to be there. But that was his last bargaining chip. So it's a matter of, he said, all right, I'm bouncing. I'm getting my boy from Toronto, and we're going to go play in Florida, live it up, you know, go through those college years, as he used to put it. And now, because of Cleveland having just incredible luck with getting first picks in the draft, they have a team that was ready to have a LeBron piece added and fulfill his PR equal opposite for the decision to go back to Cleveland, win a title there with his promise thing or whatever. I don't believe for a second that if Cleveland was a bad team, he would have gone back to Cleveland after Miami. I believe he was leaving there because they weren't going to be a team that's going to put him back in the title hunt with the level of effort that he would be able to sustain, you know. But Cleveland made itself a viable option. He went back home, made his promise, had to go through the finals, had his, you know, his soldiers get hurt, and then he win the title this year. It's all about making money and winning rings. So when it comes down to it, all of the other intangible things that we talked about that you can't measure, loyalty is the top one, and you can't have that and also do those first two goals all the time. So, you know, it is what it is. Kevin Durant did what he wanted to do to win title and make money. LeBron did what he wanted to do to win titles and make money. And everything else after that is cake at this point.
All right. Well, I'm going to say this. We're going to wrap it up. We've been going on for about an hour. I don't know, my wife's about to walk in any minute now. So I'm trying to be her before she gets home. But as you said, it's kind of true. But I think about the whole LeBron, you know, Cleveland to Miami, back to Cleveland. I see it in the light as you worked at one place. You told them how long you was going to be here. It wasn't like it was a secret. Y'all agreed to a 3-year contract. So is it not Cleveland's responsibility to say, well, even if LeBron doesn't say it, it's implied that LeBron can leave in 3 years. So why shouldn't you have a 3-year plan to make sure LeBron stays? Now, of course, one major thing is it's Cleveland. So you're not going to get everybody to say, Cleveland. You know, nobody's getting excited to go there as far as a free agent goes. The next thing is you're making all these different trades. You're bringing in dudes like Devontae Wesley. You know about his character. And that's the type of thing that you look at. It's like you're doing things just to do them instead of being a lot more strategic about who and what type of ball that you play. It never really developed into a scheme. It never really looked at, like, this is the way the Cavs play. It was just like, all right, LeBron, do what you want. You know, we're just going to run out for it, do what you want. Just hope they can do enough to help him win the game. And to me, I think that's why he sought what was in Miami, because for one, he had a little bit more control over the situation. And I think that gives him more incentive to even try harder to get people to come to Miami, because it was more about proving what he could do. You know, he was like, well, I'm going to do this little startup thing. I need to recruit some guys to help me here. You know, in Cleveland, he was inserted, and it was the company's job to do the recruiting. He decided, I'm going to change. I'm going here. And, man, if I'm going to do this, I need to call up some of these people that I know that do some of these things, you know. I need somebody like Shane Battier to bring that IQ and bring that defense and stuff like that. I need Mike Miller to come in and give me some shooting confidence. And to me, I just think that that became more important when he went to Miami, because he had something really to prove as far as, you know, why he made the decision that he did. And going back to Cleveland, that was basically a power play. I mean, we all talked about LeBron being the coach and owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers. you've seen everything that's happened. As soon as it got going, Deion Waiters, get them up out of there. And you just look at what they become, it's all about LeBron. And he would have never got that in Miami. I think they could have probably went back to the championship in Miami, but it wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have looked the same, and it probably wouldn't have been as pretty. But that's because it's LeBron. LeBron just brings the championship bounce wherever he goes. It don't really have nothing to do with Miami in that case. But him coming back to Cleveland, it gave him a chance to look at what he needed to do during the season, which is stay afloat. All right, Kyrie, I need you to go get some buckets. You got some young legs. I'm sitting here. Now watch foot up 50. I'm chill. And that was really more strategically appealing to LeBron as he ages, and also setting up groups to basically be the king of all Ohio. So whenever y'all ready to make him governor, he already going to be there in the big ass house.
That's true. I mean, there's phones in Cleveland too. The phones work in Cleveland. I know, because I lived there for over 20 some years. Like, there's phones there, so he could have called up his boys and told them to come play with him in Cleveland too, but he didn't. You know what I'm saying? He wanted to run down to Miami and team up with Wade and them. So, like, I don't know. Like, I just find it convenient that he was able to have this epiphany that they should do a little recruiting as soon as he left Cleveland, but he wasn't willing to do that when he was with Cleveland the first go around. But you see that the Cavaliers were still able to attract free agents in Cleveland after he came back. I mean, he was there, and that was the biggest selling point. You know what I'm saying? They got Kevin Love in the trade, but then Kevin Love was a free agent. Kevin Love re-signed in a hurry. When LeBron first got there, Kyrie Irving was a free agent too, and Kyrie Irving re-signed. In fact, Kyrie Irving re-signed 5 years before LeBron came back. So, I mean, like, there's some people like Cleveland. Some people don't mind moving to Cleveland or living in Cleveland. It's not the most glamorous destination. I understand that. But, you know, I mean, I just don't look at it as they can't attract free agents. Like, I think they could have attracted some free agents back during his first stint had he been more committed to the organization. But he was non-committal at that time, which is his prerogative. But the flip side is the team is not going to be able to operate and function like they should because they don't know. It's just like down in Oklahoma City right now. They don't know what's going to happen with Russell Westbrook now that Durant's gone. So now they may have to trade Westbrook. You know what I'm saying? They just don't know. It's up in the air right now because they can't get Westbrook to commit now because Durant's gone. So, I mean, there's no way they could get any other big name free agents to come down to Oklahoma City now because they don't even know if Westbrook going to be there. You know what I'm saying? So I just think that and let me put it this way. I'm happy that it all worked out for Cleveland. That's what I'm happy about.
See, I'm glad you brought up Oklahoma City because it's the perfect parallel to what Cleveland was doing. If you look at the way that Oklahoma City basically retools every year, they look to be in better shape to make a run every time after that. None of those times previously, when you looked at the way Cleveland was retooling, you was like, man, they look like they for sure gonna win the championship.
I don't know, man. They won 66 games in 2009, and they won like 62 games in 2010. They went from making that big trade that I mentioned the year after they went to the finals, halfway through the season in 2008, they made that big trade to bring in those four guys. Then they ended up in the following year, they brought in Mo Williams. And the following year, they brought in – now, granted, these ain't big-name superstars or whatever, but they're still tweaking the roster to the point that people thought that they was going to get there. The following year, they brought in Shaq, and then they traded for Jameson. You know what I'm saying? So, like, those moves didn't end up working out. You know, it's easy to sit here – you know, on Monday morning and be like, yeah, them moves was dumb. But, like, at the time, everybody had the Cavs in the finals, didn't they, back then? They did.
But you had the Cavs in the finals because of LeBron.
Sure.
Shaq was watched two teams before that. You know, that's what I'm talking about. Cleveland was bringing in people who were past their prime and had no business even trying to really help LeBron win a championship. If you look at
who were they going to bring in at that time, though? Like who were they going to bring in at that time? Especially with seeing how the whole league wanted LeBron to leave because that meant that they had a shot at getting him. So it didn't make sense for them to try to help out the Cavs. Oh, yeah, let me be my 25-year-old all-star, Cleveland. Yeah, go ahead and take him. No, we had to get those older ball players, but those older ball players knew how to win in the postseason. So, I mean, it made sense for us to try to bring those guys in.
But see, the thing about it is, it's like if you look at the way Cleveland has it set up, so you, like comparing it to Miami, of course, everybody would rather live in Miami, so it really doesn't take that much convincing for you to come there or be like, well, I take my chances there. But if you look at Cleveland outside of, like, the Liberty situation, you look at every time they wanted to add a piece, it's always somebody who was past their prime or really didn't fit to what LeBron needed for them to succeed. And if you look at what Oklahoma City was doing, regardless if Durant was coming back or not, picking up Oladipo, picking up Sabonis, like, those are going to be contributors that will actually make Oklahoma City better, regardless if you got Kevin Durant or not. And that's the point I'm trying to say is, if you were to take LeBron off that team after they made those trades, they would still look like trash.
I just think that I don't think they made any of those moves without, like I said, LeBron's consent. You know what I'm saying?
Of course, he's going to give consent because, like I said, it's like you don't know. This was his first, 8 years in the NBA. He had never really been in a position to really, you know, be under a coach that had a certain system or been led by an organization or somebody that would be like, well, this is the best thing for us. He's going to just go with it. The dude was out of high school at the time. So it's like, well, yeah, that dude's pretty good. I seen him, I played against him. That's all he got. It's like, well, yeah, I think he's pretty good. And he's going to sign off on it. It's different now.
I think if the Cavs tried to bring 2005 Ray Allen into the fold. Like, if the Cavs would have landed 2005 Ray Allen, would we be having a different conversation? Like, they cleared the cap space. They did what they needed to do. They tried to get Tom Izzo to coach the team. Maybe if Tom Izzo coaches the team, there's a different outcome. They tried to supposedly get John Calipari to coach the team. But maybe there's a different outcome if they get John Calipari. Like, they tried to make moves to appease, you know, people that look at it like you look at it. You know what I'm saying? I think if they would have landed Michael Redd, if they would have landed Ray Allen, if they would have landed Tom Izzo, maybe there's a different thing. But you can't get everybody you want. You know what I'm saying? They turned Cleveland down. So, you know what I'm saying? Cleveland's hands are tied a little bit. But the biggest reason they turned Cleveland down, I think, is because LeBron said, I might not be here in 3 years or 2 years or 1 year. So how are they supposed to build a team like that? You can't build a team like that when your star player is not committed to the team. What kind of – that's backwards. You know what I'm saying? You can't do it that way.
3 years, though. Three whole years.
That's not that long of a time. I don't think that's a long time.
He just went back to Cleveland. They won a chip in 2 years.
This is still early on LeBron, though. This is still early LeBron, but it's almost a chicken and egg kind of situation because LeBron's not going to commit unless at the time it seemed like they were proving they're going to get him to a championship. Cleveland can only do so many moves until they know that LeBron's going to be there for a long time. And like he was saying, 3 years isn't terribly long in the NBA to say, okay, players X, Y, and Z, come here and play with LeBron. You might get one of those players, but you do have to overcome the living in Cleveland versus other places people can go versus other money people can get somewhere else. And then on top of that, your biggest selling point is in fact playing with LeBron. But if LeBron's not going to be there, you only really have half of your biggest attracting piece. Like, your bait is basically cut in half. Like, you can play with LeBron for a little bit. Which, I mean, if it was the three of us, we would probably jump at the chance to play with LeBron for an afternoon because it would be dope. But it's like, if it's it goes back to wanting to win rings and wanting to make money. If you're going to Cleveland from somewhere else, you're probably not making all the money and you're trying to get the ring. And you may not get in that first chance. You may get in that second one. But if something happens, you don't. That third time may be your last time to play with LeBron. So I think that kind of hamstrung the team a little bit. But then again, it's LeBron's prerogative to say, I'm not going to commit to, you know, the rest of my life with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think it was a situation where LeBron could have done things different. If he would have, the Cavaliers may have done things different. Or it could have been LeBron stuck on a bad Cleveland team forever and being miserable. So, I mean, it turned out the way it turned out. I'm not sure how Cleveland could have done much better.
I don't know either. And the Cavs had a deal in place to get Amari Stoudemire, and Phoenix said no at the 11th hour. So that wasn't
right.
And that's how they ended up getting Jamison, was because they had to deal with Stoudemire, and that deal fell apart at the end. So, like, I don't, you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that the Cleveland's management was flawless in those years. Don't get me wrong, but. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Oklahoma City comparison is a little different because when Durant signed back in 2010, he signed like the full extension. He signed like the entire length of the contract that he could. He signed the maximum amount of years. And LeBron didn't do that. And that put the whole world on notice that the best player in the league might be leaving in a couple of years. I don't think the rest of the league is going to do all that they can do to necessarily help the Cavs in that scenario.
Well, I don't think you're right about that. It's not in the best interest of anybody to help the Cavaliers out. But the thing about it is, it's all about your front office making subsequent moves that will help get you into championship position. Like, if you look at, like, what Boston is doing right now, you know, they got good players, they got picks, and they got a great coach. And all they're doing is just lining everything up so when the time comes, they can make a move. If you look at what the Cavaliers was doing, they were just like, we got to do something. LeBron thinking about leaving, we got to do something. Not thinking about, well, we might be able to, you know, front load some contracts, maybe make them 3 year, maybe 2 year with player options in the second or third year. You know, looking at some of these creative ways to, you know, use your cap space and, you know, use picks and just, there's so many things that they probably could have tried to do, but they just couldn't pull them off because they were in win now mode, but not really being strategic about it, almost like Cleveland was last year. I don't think they ever would have gave 2 first-round picks for Mozgov knowing that he wasn't ever going to play for them again. You know, but that seems to me like the most Cleveland shit that really goes down is when they make moves like that. So that's all I'm going to say. It's like you can't say a lot about LeBron being non-committal, but it's like you said, Anthony, it's a chicken and the egg thing. And the GM, I mean, yeah, the whole front office really got to bring it. So that's really it. It's like my wife is getting here. So I guess that'll be the last word. Y'all got anything else y'all want to promote before we get up out of here?
I'll jump in, you know, check out the, whenever I come out with the next Orange and Blueprint podcast and, you know, just look out for everything coming down the pipeline from the Hip Hop Sports Report.
All right. Yeah. Word up, man. Hip Hop Sports Report. We're always doing big things. We got some big plans for the summer still. We got, Anthony's got an NFL piece coming out real soon. So be on the lookout for that. We're still doing the tail of the tape, breaking down different rap albums that have come out of late. We still got NBA free agency reaction stuff. We still got the preseason podcast of the year popping off, and we're going to be looking at some more hip hop stuff we got planned to get. I don't want to give it away just yet, but we're going to do something special surrounding hip hop here in the next few weeks as it relates to the history of hip hop and what's happening this year. So we got a lot to talk about Hip Hop Sports Report, man. So we appreciate all the love, all the followers that we get. And of course, we appreciate you, CL. Thanks for setting this up and making sure that we was a part of it.
No doubt, man. I know we went super long.
Yeah, we did.
So I don't know. I'll probably
find it. I said I got carried away talking about the Cavs, man. You can't just take shots at the Cavs front office and expect me to not stand up for us. You know what I'm saying? I had to say something.
I give you that.
let's trash the Atlanta Hawks next time.
Oh, yeah. We could do that, too. Let's not forget about trash Michael Jordan.
I'm about to tell you no way. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know, man. There's so many different things, but we might have to make this black thing something we do on a regular. I don't know if it be every week, every other week, something. But definitely a lot of fun. Y'all can get at me at The Rundown South on Twitter, therundown.com podcast. You know, look for both of them on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. You on SoundCloud?
We're not on SoundCloud yet, but we're working on that too. But like, there's a SoundCloud page that's out there, so you can actually go find us on SoundCloud and listen to a couple podcasts that's out there. But we're not on there recurring just yet. So what?
You got the sampler on. Yeah, you got the sampler
exactly,
on
exactly. We got the sampler and popping right
that's
now.
That's what I call. I'm not ready to pay for SoundCloud.
That's pretty much what it is. That's pretty much what it is. Not when you don't have to pay for iTunes and Stitcher. So we on iTunes and exactly. Stitcher, and you can of course find us on Facebook at HHS Report and twitter.com/HHS Report.
No doubt. And y'all can get all that information to rundown.com, and y'all can link up with all of us, follow us all on Twitter, and we out here. Peace.
Peace.
So there it is. New podcast, right? Different format, three-man weave kind of deal. CL, myself, Anthony, I thought it was dope, you know? So we'll revisit that format later on in the future. We may see that format again done strictly on the hip-hop sports support side, because I thought that was kind of cool how we did it, and it worked out kind of well. So we may just start to adopt that a little bit more frequently on the hip-hop sports support end now that we have some new technology in the fold. So we'll see where it goes. But I hope you guys enjoyed this two-part podcast. Again, one last shout-out to CL. Go ahead and follow him on Twitter at TheRundownSouth, and check out his website, TheRundownSouth.com. Or excuse me, I think it's TheRundown.com. And, of course, we're always at HipHopSportsSupport.com. You guys know where to find us, so appreciate you stopping through and checking out your boy. This is Jay Hicks with the Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast on Twitter, on Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter. Or excuse me, I always say that. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter, on Facebook. You guys know what it is. And, yeah. Come one, come all. We want more listeners, as many as we can get. We're happy to have y'all here. So, holla at you, man. We out of here. Later.